from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh yeah.
It goes back to, right, you know, how does an organization work well? And it's with myself being the head coach and Nick as the GM being tied together and in constant communication and always working together on everything that we do. So it has to be, there's a trust factor there. And I trust what Nick does and know he knows the type of players that we're looking for and the type of players that we're about. So it makes the transition for me, it makes all of the transactions very seamless because of the trust that we have in one another.
All right, that was D'Amico Ryan's meeting with the media yesterday. And that trust is going to be on display for the next 9 hours because the Texans, at least outwardly, have a lot of work to do on this roster. They were among the teams yesterday that at least listed publicly made the least amount of cuts. So D'Amico met with the media yesterday at 11 o'clock, and there's a lot to keep your eyes on today. Keep it tuned to Sports Radio 610 all day long, including right now. Welcome in. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Hello this morning, my friend.
Hello.
How are you?
I think these last couple press conferences after the game and then yesterday for D'Amico Ryan's, I feel like you can read the angst on his face and in his body language. He seemed almost somber at times, and it's a much harder group to cut down and pare down this year. There's still positions like cornerback where it's not as deep as you want it, and I think there will be some swapping out of players there. But I think that he's got to let go of more good football players that he's also had a year to form a relationship with. I felt for him. So D'Amico's not some cold-hearted brute that's just going to be like, get out of here anyway. We don't need you. Don't let the door hit you on the butt. Yeah, but if it does, we're not responsible for any payments because you're already cut.
Because you signed a waiver. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, he's a human being, unlike many of the NFL head coaches out there.
He's not like Bill O'Brien, who probably was like, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like, 25 jubilant of the guys who got let go, like, oh, I'm going to relish this. I don't know. At Hard Knocks, it seemed like some of the guys. That was back in 2015 before Bill turned into Dictator Bill. But, it's man, there's going to be a lot of news coming out of NRG Stadium today, man.
It is one of those things, too. It's not just cutting down to the 53. It's that there's 1,000 players that hit the market all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So you're cutting down to 53, and then you realize, oh, there's another guy out there who's better than my current backup interior offensive lineman. So let's get rid of this guy too, if we can bring this other guy in. So it's a lot of activity. It's a gold rush, all at once.
We're gonna probably get Nick. Nick's gonna be with the media tomorrow. I think we're gonna get him next week, probably like Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, I think. I am curious. I don't know how curious the audience is, but when you bring that up just now, Seth, like, is this something? Because you're right. There's 31 other teams that are cutting guys. Do you, like, assign, you know, I don't know how many scouts they have or how many people they've got in their personnel department.
427.
Whatever it is, do you assign one guy for each team and they're just keeping eyes on a team? Like, you know what I mean?
I would imagine, the way I imagine it is, you know, they've got grades on all these guys around the league. They try to do at least a little bit of something.
Yeah.
And there's just a spreadsheet of some sort that everything hits. You look and you got your board to see who's actually out there that you're interested in. And then you got to try, but you got to make these decisions quickly.
Quickly,
I feel like it's funny. As advanced as NFL teams are in some respects, they're having to make decisions on some of these things way faster than we as fantasy football players probably fret and wring our hands over some decisions because of the volume and the speed that all of it happens.
3 p.m. today is the cutdown deadline, and then waivers, if I'm not mistaken, close up at 11 a.m. tomorrow. So, like, it doesn't end with cutting it down to 53. In fact, like, to your point, that's where the mayhem begins. Just to go find guys that are 51, 52, and 53 on your roster, basically. But I do think you touched on cornerback. In going through the exercise of putting a 53-man roster together, and again, at least outwardly, the Texans, for our purposes, aren't anywhere close to it. Internally, they probably are. As Nick pointed out on McAfee last week, like 47 of the spots are sewn up already. So really, whatever angst is going on is identifying the last few guys and then probably telling guys, hey, we'd love to bring you back on the practice squad, et cetera, et cetera. the process is crazy.
Yeah.
So DeMeco met with the media yesterday. I think the thing that popped up yesterday that was the most interesting with the Texans was Jordan Schultz reported this yesterday, that several teams are calling the Texans about John Metchie III.
Yeah.
Here's what it says. Sources. Multiple teams have reached out to the Texans to see if John Metchie III would be available in trade due to the plethora of receivers on their roster. It's unclear if Houston would move him, but several teams are keeping a close eye. The former second-round pick out of Alabama had 10 catches for 100 yards and a touchdown in the preseason. And we know that that last sentence doesn't begin to tell the story of John Metchie's, well, his overall story, but of this preseason either, where it was very up and down for Metchie. It ended up for him. He was really good the last couple weeks of the preseason. What do you make of trade rumors involving or teams pinging the Texans to see about John Mechie's availability?
I would say that with John Metchie, you know, you still got 2 years on his rookie contract left. I'd be really hesitant to trade him if he's a guy that you've liked what you saw out of him, that he came back physically, looked different, took a little while for it to really click for him in training camp, but in some respects, this is almost like a rookie year for him. And then it clicked, and I think for a guy that you drafted in the second round, you always got to look at it and say, all right, well, Let's say somebody offered a second-round pick, which I think is probably high, but let's say somebody offered a second-round pick. That might be the highest offer you'd get for a John Metchie. Then you got to think, all right, well, I mean, this is a guy that we spent a second-round pick on, and it looks like it might be working out. There's a 33% chance that whoever we draft with that second-round pick ends up being a starter in the NFL.
Yeah.
And you'll have 2 more years of cost control, but I don't know if the opportunity cost, and I don't think they'll get offered a second-round pick. So I'm skeptical that they'll let him go. I think they're going to stick with Xavier Hutchinson and John Metchie.
I do, too. And we'll hear from DeMeco in a second on the wide receiver room. I do, too. When I saw that tweet from Jordan Schultz yesterday, I retweeted it, because immediately what goes into my head is, okay, what's the minimum that I would take back in a trade for John Metchie III? And I said, I would do this trade, a second round pick for John Metchie plus a day three pick. Like one of those things where you give him back like a fifth or so. Metchie and a fifth for a second. I said, I would do a trade like that. The reaction was really interesting because it ranged everywhere from, you're never getting a two for Metchie. And I said, I know you're probably not. That's my point. Like I don't know that there's a trade out there that I would do for Metchie, because I probably wouldn't give up a two, even if I'm getting a fifth back, if I'm getting Metchie, if I'm another team. But the reaction was interesting to that proposal, because there's a lot of people like, can't trade Metchie. So the recency bias is incredible, because there's probably some of the same people that were saying Mechie's trash 2 weeks ago. But the one good point people brought up was, look, you only got Diggs on a 1-year deal. So there's a chance that John Metchie III is your third wide receiver next year, too.
Right, you know? I think that's one thing that it's easy to forget is that Diggs is on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, maybe it works out and they extend him a little bit or they don't, but it's very possible that he's not here next year. So, I'm getting kind of stingy with parting ways with younger players. It's funny because the NFL trades are just becoming more and more frequent and common, and especially maybe on this team because Nick Caserio is so active. I am starting to think about it in baseball terms a lot more, like with service time and cost control and everything like that. And the fact that John Metchie's on his rookie contract for two more years is very appealing to me right now.
Yeah, well,
because they're spending money in free agency elsewhere. I don't want to have to also pay once Stephon Diggs leaves.
No, and dude, in 2 years when CJ gets paid, that's going to be at the forefront of everything we talk about with assets and free agency is going to be the potential cap hit. Here's to
Derek Stingley signed with Mulligatawny.
I had that in headlines, but yes. Yeah, Derek Stingley Jr. has the same agent as CJ Stroud and Deshaun Watson now. He signed with Mulligatawny yesterday. Oh, by the way, Derek Stingley Jr. eligible for a contract extension after the upcoming season. So we'll see how that goes. Here's D'Amico Ryans yesterday on the wide receiver room.
Yeah, we have a really tight wide receiver room, right? It's a lot of good players in their room. A lot of guys made a lot of plays throughout the training camp practices, and also some guys showed up in the games as well. Feel really good about the room that we have. You know, you have the top three guys that we have are all big-time playmakers, but all the other guys have stepped up and made plays at some point, right? And that's a good problem to have, Jonathan. When you have as many guys as we have, it's a really good problem. And I'm definitely excited about the group. I think Coach McDaniel's done a great job of working with that group and getting those guys better.
You touched on earlier in this segment, Seth, like, hey, cornerback maybe is a position where there, you know, you go through the exercise of putting a roster together, you're like, ah, okay, the back end of this room still ain't all that great. Why they're gonna have a very good wide receiver room, and I think they're gonna have a very good running back room, this team. Yeah. Regardless of how it shakes out. And by the way, there's been no resolution yet on the all-important Damian Pierce and Cam Akers situation. We're still in a holding pattern on that one.
Yeah, it's funny. I was on a stream last night when one person was just kind of... I think he was flat-out disgusted with me for the way that I've been trying to read D'Amico Ryans' body language when asked about Damian Pierce. And I'll tell you what. I think when it comes to coach speak, it's really, really hard to read... It's really hard to read D'Amico Ryans because I think he hates having to do coach speak, and because of that, it makes it very effective coach speak.
Yeah.
You can't tell whether he's trying to play it close to the vest or if he's in genuine turmoil over what he's saying or not being able to say what he wants to say. And with Damian, it's a tricky situation because you could read it. You know, there's reasons he might not want to give a ringing endorsement of Damian Pierce right now, just because it kind of opens up the door for people reading into other answers or what have you. So, but when people ask Damian Pierce, he has said some nice things about him, but he hasn't said, well, oh no, Damian's on the team or anything. He's said very vague things like, well, we've seen all we need to see out of Damian.
Yep,
that could mean a million different things.
Yeah, it's a good job by...
If you say it with a different tone of voice, it could be, we've seen everything we need to see out of this guy.
If it's a transcript, it could go any number of ways.
Right.
That's true. All right, the Astros, we'll get to them in the next segment. They got walked off last night by the Phillies. Another game where they had a lead. Man, they've had leads in all of these games so far on this road trip. It's been a painful one. Where do the Astros sit right now? Thoughts on that? And there is some must-see TV going on tonight. We will get into that as we're off and running on a Tuesday here on Payne and Pendergast.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal, the raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Ground ball, pass to diving Altuve into right field, being waved around Kyle Schwarber. Here comes the throw, not in time. Phillies walk it off. Bryce Harper wins the game for Philadelphia 3-2 with a walk-off single just past the diving attempt of Jose Altuve.
Some tough losses on this road trip for the Astros. Add this one to the list.
Yeah, that was Todd Callis and Jeff Blum on the call. Space City yeah. Home Network, as we welcome you back in to Payne and Pendergast. Blum nailed it, man. They've had 5 games on this road trip now. They're 2-3. They've led in all 5 games. They've led it fairly substantially deep into all 5 of these games.
Yeah.
And they've only been able to close the deal on 2 of them so far.
It's been frustrating, yet now because of the Astros standing, where they sit in the standings, I look at it with is more encouraging in some respects. All right, you're playing it down to the wire with really good baseball teams with this rotating cast of characters, where Caratini gets his first start at first base last night. He's played there 3 times this season, but that was his first start. That makes 9 players who have played first base for the Astros this year.
That feels like a lot.
You've got Shea Whitcomb coming up with the double that gave him the lead.
Yeah.
And you're doing all of this while also Jeremy Peña is playing the worst defensively that he's played in his entire career.
Yep.
Like, I don't know what the hell's going on with Jeremy Peña. I trust that somehow this is a flukish stretch that he'll get back on track. But the fact that they've been slugging it out with really good baseball teams and coin flip games, I'm not overly distraught. No. I would love to. It would be awesome if they were stacking up a winning record on the road versus these really good baseball teams. But man, they're figuring out a way to get it done. I've seen a lot of people say that, a lot of Astros fans say that they are maybe more emotionally tied to this team and proud of them than any in the stretch since 2015. Just because of that, because you're getting these performances out of guys that you barely were aware of until just the last couple months.
Well, it's hard to find a team. I'd have to go back and look, but it's hard to find a team during this window of the last decade or so, 2015 we'll use as the benchmark, that's been hit with more adversity in season than this team. I mean, at one time they had 7 starting pitchers on the injured list. You know what I mean?
And you kind of almost forget, because it's been so long now, that, yeah, Kyle Tucker's not out there.
Right.
Yordan's had issues in the last week. Altuve's needing rests. You know, it's one after the other of hits. So where you could be saying, here we go again. And yet, credit Joe Espada for keeping it all together and figuring out a way to just be competitive right this moment.
Yeah, be competitive. And then, by the way, let's not forget, they were 10 games back in the middle of June, and they're leading by 3.5 games. So it's not, this is not a team, Seth, we're not sitting here in a, at least not yet, but in a muck of 5 teams battling for the last wild card spot. They've managed to put themselves back in a position where they control the division. Like, it really is remarkable. My feeling on the Baltimore series and the game last night, and I think the game tonight is going to be this way, Verlander and Nola tonight should be
fine. Yeah.
You know, Verlander, I mean, I don't expect Verlander to go 7 innings or anything like that, because he's still coming back from the injury. But on paper, that's a matchup you put on the WrestleMania poster. You know what I mean? With the two guys staring each other in the face. Like, this is going to be fun tonight. My feeling on the last 5 games last night in the Baltimore series is like, this is what postseason baseball feels like, you know?
Yeah.
These are 2 good teams. And in the Orioles series, they were the ones coming up with the big hits. You know, they had 13 runs in that series, and 10 of them were driven in on 3 swings. You know, when they needed a big hit late in the game, they got it. And the Astros were able to muck a split out of that whole thing undermanned. And then last night, kind of the same thing. You're right. Like, Shea Whitcomb's the one getting the big hit for this team in a game that finished 3-2. Like, they're piecing it together. Yeah.
You know, Brian King comes up
appearance.
Here.
Yeah.
The other guy that I'll give credit to, I'll give him the July and August MVP for this team, Rob Manfred. Because honestly, thank God for the Ghost Runner. This team right now, but again, this goes back to Dana Brown and Joe Espada, the way they're managing the roster. All right, you're working with one less reliever right now than ideally you would because you've got a six-man starting rotation. But without the Ghost Runner, man, the Astros could be just devastated and having to go some long, more than 10 innings in a lot of these extra innings games they've had.
Yeah.
So I know everybody's always heaping praise on Rob Manfred, but let's hug him a little bit more.
They were for a year. I thought the pitch clock people were like into. Like I don't know. I thought a lot of people liked kind of the speeding up of the game.
I think a lot of people did, but a lot of people were really against it. The speeding up of the game, I am like hook, line, and sinker into. The biggest question is, all right, the injuries to the pitchers.
Yeah.
And like, how long can they sustain this and like all of that? How much is it affecting the pitchers? We'll see.
Yeah. And when you say thank God for the Ghost Runner, you're saying in spite of the fact the Astros lost last night, they didn't have to use four more guys to get to the 13th inning or something like that.
Plus, though, I do think as much as I used to kind of complain about the old hardliners that were always bemoaning the demise of small ball in baseball, there's been a lot more small ball on this team. And it does, man, in those critical situations. It gets fun when you got. Last night was a perfect example. If it had gone the Astros' way, Schwarber hoofs it around and gets that, and it sucks in the moment. But for baseball,
yeah,
I think it's good. We've seen more bunts, we've seen more just gamesmanship and strategy in those 10th innings. That it's weird because one of the most gimmicky of the rule changes has also led back to some of the more old school decision making.
They have. I wish the Astros were a little better at it. I'll be honest. I like it selfishly just because the games are over. It like last night, 8:40 extra inning game. It's done at 8:40. Like that's
anybody who's awake right now, I think probably appreciates it.
Yeah. This isn't me telling the 9:30 audience, oh, woe is me, I have to get up early. These are all. If you're listening, you feel our pain, right?
Look, everybody listening and us talking right now are people who have to also contend with these AL West road games. So, there's a higher likelihood that on any given night on an AL West road game, you're kind of like, all right, you know what? Yeah, I can stick around for the end of this game.
Yeah.
So it's over.
And then
it's
over at some point. They lose in extra innings, and you're like, I stayed up till 11:30 for this.
My wife is gonna get yelled at because I'm moody today for this.
Right. Here's Joe Espada, his thoughts on last night's game.
Yeah, you know, I thought we played well. You know, we were in the game there. We're one hit away from winning that game. But that's what happens. You play these type of teams, and everything is close. Every play matters. Every pitch matters. Every at bat, you know, matters. So again, turn the page. Got another one tomorrow.
Yeah, it's playoff baseball, man. Yeah, I mean, these are the types of teams you're going to be seeing in October. So that's kind of how I look at it. On the interwebs yesterday, Seth, because the Astros were playing their first game in Philly since Game 5 of the World Series back in 2022, they were there was a lot of reliving going on yesterday. And if you recall, Game 5 of the World Series in 2022, late in the game, I believe in the eighth inning, because Presley was in, featured this.
Fly ball right center field. McCormick on the move. He's at the track. He's at the wall. Makes the grab. Kaz McCormick. Two gone in the ninth.
All right, so remember that was a Chaz catch. That's the Chaz never has to pay for a drink ever again play.
Yeah,
he can be bad for the next however many years, and Chaz McCormick will still be loved. Now, Chaz is putting that to the test this year because Chaz has not been good this season. And this is what dawned on me yesterday. I was watching that play, Seth. I'm like, damn, man, Chaz was a player back then, man. Like, he was an integral part of this team. He had secured that starting center field spot. That's one of the biggest plays and most memorable plays, certainly in recent Astros history, back in 2022. And it made me think of Damian Pierce.
Because
it made me think of Damian. A lot of people have been comparing Damian to Jose Abreu, and I hate doing that because Jose Abreu was bad at his job from the time he got here. And overpaid, too, by the way, to be bad at his job.
Yeah.
So I don't want to put that evil on Damian Pierce. I watched Chaz make that catch again yesterday. I'm like, man, that guy was so good in 2022. I just wish he was good like that again because that is a memorable play. And I'm like, man, I feel like I just played Mad Libs. Who was I saying this about? Like, 2 days ago, and it was Damian Pierce. Pierce was great in 2022, like Chaz, underpaid in 2022, like Chaz, and making memorable plays in 2022, like that play where he trucked seven Jags, probably the same week as the World Series, you know what I mean? It was like six games into the season, or whatever it was. He probably did it like the same day Chaz made that catch. That's who Damian Pierce is. He's Chaz. He's not Abreu. Stop it with the Abreu.
And it's, there were people that were up, I would go on with the afternoon show, and they couldn't believe that I was pulling for Myers in the competition of McCormick versus Myers, because what am I, an idiot? So it is. I guess the biggest difference, I don't want to get overly technical here, the biggest difference between the Texans and the Astros situations there is that the Texans did not win a World Series in 2022.
That's true.
You have that added element to it that with Chaz, it was, man, he came up big in a big moment.
Yeah.
Felt like, oh, he's got that it factor or what have you.
Yep. I just, man, like yesterday I'm watching that catch. I'm like, I wish this guy were as good as he was in 2022. I'm like, I just said that like 2 days ago. Who did I say that about? DP, man. What do you think? 3 o'clock today. Where's Damian Pierce? Is he a Houston Texan? Is he somewhere else?
My gut is, and again, in reading the pain on D'Amico's face, I think, and how awkward he's been when asked about Damian Pierce the last couple times he's been asked about him. My 100% complete guess is that right now they perhaps have an offer from another team for Damian Pierce, and they're contemplating exactly where do we go from here. And I think that there are situations where, as cold and calculating a business as it can be, there are times where with guys like Damian, you want to do right by the player. And they might even include him in conversations about this, about his future and everything. And you're in a limited time schedule. This is 100% guess by me, but they're trying to balance in one hand. All right, we think he has this potential. We really believe it. We've seen glimmers of it in practice, and he might be on the brink of having some kind of a breakthrough. And yet. Because Nick thinks and operates this way. All right, I got to check my own bias and blind spots here. Am I making an emotional decision or not? If we had a consultant come in to tell us what to do, if that consultant were Seth Payne would be like, man, you got to cut ties. It's just not working out here. He's probably better off somewhere else in a different system and in a different environment for whatever reason. And maybe you take a little bit less to send him off to the right spot, because I think he's that kind of a player that people actually love and really care. Like, you gotta let the human side seep into this a little bit, but it's probably better for everybody if he's somewhere else.
I think there's other teams that are probably legitimately excited about the possibility Damian Pierce might be available cheap, that they're able to buy low on him. I think the other thing too, Seth, is that it's not just Damian in a vacuum. It's you got better solutions sitting right in front of you
exactly.
right now. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's in 2021 where Scotty Phillips is on the roster.
Right, right. If it were last year's team, I think it's a lot easier to say, well, you know what? We don't have a lot of other guys on the roster right now that we feel has the same upside as Damian does. But now, I'm looking at the current roster as, okay, depending on Andrew Beck's health situation, they might not actually have a fullback out there. British Brooks has really shown more than I personally anticipated and expected out of him as a running back, but that I think he's also got some potential as a fullback. Mm-hmm. That it's hard to expose some of those guys to waivers just for keeping Damian Pierce and his potential upside.
Agreed. All right, so keep it tuned here. I would imagine that there's a decent chance we start seeing some of the decisions being made while Seth and I are on the air today till 10 a.m., but certainly all day long, keep it tuned right here. Anytime a cut happens or gets reported, we'll have it for you here. And a quick reminder, just because a cut gets reported, Seth, as you pointed out several times, just because a cut gets reported doesn't mean that there's not a trade on the back end of this. You know, like,
yeah.
Guys get reported being cut, and then that's really just a way to let other teams know they're for sale, you know, and that there's a trade to be made there. So keep it tuned here all day long on Cutdown Day. 3 o'clock today, the deadline. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. Headlines up next. News with the Texans, not just roster news, agency news with the Texans. We'll circle back to the Astros. Big contract doled out in the NFL yesterday. One of the wide receiver soap operas is over. Is it going to lead to more soap operas with that team, though? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, headlines. It is cutdown day in the NFL. The Texans, by 3 o'clock today, will have a 53-man roster. That, I would imagine, it always is. Even with good teams every year, that 53-man roster is somewhat temporary because then teams go sifting through the recyclables out on the curb of the other 31 teams. D'Amico Ryans was asked about that yesterday. Will you add players from other teams to the Houston Texans?
I just rely on Nick and his staff and trust the work that they put in, right, to see if there's anybody else that they feel that's worthy of, you know, upgrading our roster. So I rely heavily on them when it comes to those decisions.
Yeah, that's one thing where the question had something to do with, you know, does Nick consult you on that stuff? I think where Nick and D'Amico consult every day during training camp is on the current roster and guys D'Amico feels good about, doesn't feel good about. So when it comes to especially those backup roles, obviously D'Amico's not out there watching every other team the way the personnel staff is. But there's guys, you know, Nick knows what types of players D'Amico and Bobby Slowick want on the offense and defense, and Frank Ross as well. So some of those moves on the periphery, that's all Nick. It's the conversations I think that they're probably spending a lot of time on between the coaches and Nick leading up to all of this are backup quarterback,
yep.
Damian Pierce, I think some of the cornerbacks. And again, I don't think in the moment when it's time to pull the trigger, Nick doesn't have to go consult D'Amico. But on some of these guys at backup cornerback, I think Nick's out there shopping. I think Nick's got a list of teams that might be cutting guys that they're interested in.
And you said backup quarterback, too. You mean like the third straight Case and Tim Boyle? Like, cause Davis,
yeah, the
Davis
third string
is the backup.
Quarterback.
Yeah.
Third string quarterback.
Davis is the backup, yeah. So that'll be happening today. Like, a lot of stuff's going to be coming down today. So keep it tuned right here. We'll have it first, and we'll keep you posted, man. 3 o'clock today, we'll know what, at least temporarily, the 2024 Houston Texans look like. The other bit of news from the Texans yesterday, Derek Stingley Jr. has changed representation, and he has hired David Mulligetta as his agent per Aaron Wilson of KPRC2. That's where I saw it first. David Mulligetta will be the agent for Derek Stingley Jr., who, if he has a season this year, like the last 8 games were for him last year, he will have a pretty good argument, I guess, to get a contract extension. He'd be eligible after year 3, which is this coming season for him. Does this still matter to us that David Mulligetta represents C.J. Stroud? So he's going to be very much in our lives 2 years from now and getting C.J. Stroud, presumably, an extension?
I think it doesn't affect me now because, look at some of our fears about David Mulligetta. For one, David Mulligetta and the Texans did extend Deshaun Watson's deal. And now it was completely different people negotiating that deal for the Texans at the time. But it's not like they've never worked with David Mulligetta before. And then, honestly, 2 things. One is there were a lot of people that thought the Texans wouldn't draft C.J. Stroud because David Mulligetta was his agent. And I'm not sure David Mulligetta knew whether or not the Texans would draft one of his clients or not. I feel like David Mulligetta might have been sweating that out a little bit, that somehow his reputation was actually going to prevent a player from getting drafted by the Texans. But that obviously wasn't an obstacle to drafting C.J. Stroud. But the other is, and honestly, looking the Deshaun Watson trade as potentially fraught with animosity and everything else that whole situation could have been between David Mulligetta and Nick Caserio, those guys, they had to work together to pull off, honestly, I mean, Sean, in terms of if you separate all of the ugliness of the situation from it, like from the Texans' perspective, that was like freaking Dunkirk, man. Like the Texans were kind of trapped with this quarterback that you could argue that nobody would want him, or they would take him at a reduced rate or whatever it would be. And they got out of that situation with a king's ransom.
Yeah.
Because of the way that they set it up, where Nick Caserio, and I don't think if you lived in Houston and you didn't go through it, I don't think you could ever really fully appreciate how tense all of that was. They worked with David Mulligetta to create this auction type environment. You know, you had to pay the cover at the door and agree to a price before you're allowed to enter that little mini free agency. And the Texans ended up with a haul, and that required cooperation from David Mulligetta. So I'm not overly worried about it. I think that the negotiation will be whatever it is.
I'm not worried about it. I think it's just a different organization now than it was when Deshaun was going through all that stuff. Like that version of the Texans was like an awkward kid going through puberty with pimples and braces and everything else. And now, yeah, like the Texans are, they've been in the gym and they're shredded and they've got the good haircut.
Well, when you say that situation, do you mean the first contract?
I'm talking about the version of the Texans that led to Deshaun demanding a trade with Easterby in the building.
Trade, right?
Yeah, with Easterby in the building. Yeah. It's this is a. I mean, like, functional doesn't do it justice. This is a well-run organization now with Caserio and D'Amico doing things, and they've, you know, so it's. There should be if you're an agent for a good player, there should be way more trust in this version of the Texans than there was in that version of the Texans 4 years ago.
And that's where Cal, you know, honestly, Cal likes to give his football people the authority to do football things. So the very thing that led to Jack Easterby and all of the weirdness of Jack Easterby, it's the same thing from the owner that also allows Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans to do their jobs.
Yeah.
He gives them a lot of latitude to make those decisions.
Yep.
So like that part of it, I don't worry about, because I don't think Cal tries to let those guys just do their thing.
Think about this too, specific to Stingley. Like if Stingley has an All-Pro season and he's up for a contract after this year, I just think about Nick Caserio, and I think Nick's able to divorce himself from a lot of the emotion that goes with these picks and how they turn out and everything else. He's very pragmatic when it comes to looking at the draft and realizes even the high picks are coin flips sometimes. Even the third overall pick in the draft, like Stingley. Yeah. But man, if I were in Nick's shoes, there'd be part of me that could not wait to pay Derek Stingley based on all the heat that I was getting a year ago for not taking Sauce Gardner. You know, uh-huh. where the paying of Derek Stingley, the justified payment to Derek Stingley with a top-notch cornerback contract is validation that I made the right pick.
You would,
thing.
Your pettiness would be your undoing.
100% it would, yeah.
That's why you always had so many issues with Dusty Baker, is because you identified yourself in a lot of Dusty. Where Dusty, sometimes it felt like he was doing some things almost out of pettiness and grudge.
Kindred spirits.
You would be exactly the same guy.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
You identified your self-hatred flowed over onto Dusty Baker.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Astros, speaking of Dusty Baker, the Astros lose to the Phillies last night 3-2 in 10 innings. I know Dusty's no longer the manager, but just a little segue there. Joe Spada is the manager. He said that they've been leaning really, really hard on the bullpen of late.
Yes. You know, our bullpen, that's been outstanding and throughout this whole entire road trip, giving us a chance to win some games. So, you know, we're leaning hard on those guys. They've been really, really good, reliable. But just haven't been able to get that big hit there to seal a win. Like all those games.
Someone asked on the text page a little earlier this morning, what do you guys think of them leaving Blanco in the sixth inning? Like, they're in the middle of an 18-game stretch without a day off right now. Like, if you have a pitcher whose pitch count is somewhere in the 70s after five innings, you leave him out there in the sixth inning.
They're short a reliever right now.
Yeah.
And the relievers that you're bringing in are guys like Brian King and guys that are who's done a great job pressed into the circumstances that he's in. It's just dicey. It's really, really dicey. I can't fault him for leaving starting pitchers in, because They and this game, for instance, you go in, you end up having to use Hader, yet again twice for two innings, and it's just not an ideal situation. But that's the least regrettable decision, I think, in terms of I'm not going to second guess him on that one.
Nope, I'm with you on that. CeeDee Lamb has a new deal, so we've got three receivers that are in the midst of drama right now, all thanks to the Justin Jefferson market resetting contract of $35 million a year. Ja'Marr Chase, who's back at practice with the Bengals. He's still got 2 years left on his deal. He's got really no recourse. Brandon Ayuk, who is still in this weird holding pattern where now he's not even news anymore. Like, nobody's even talking about Brandon Ayuk. CeeDee Lamb gets a deal done yesterday, Seth. 4 years, $136 million. That's $34 million a year. That puts him at number two behind Justin Jefferson in that.
I'm torn here because as much as I love piling on Jerry Jones, I will credit him with, because a lot of people are saying, well, why didn't you just offer this 3 months ago and you would have been fine? I don't know if CeeDee Lamb would have accepted it. Maybe CeeDee Lamb really did want to just figure, hey, it happens with the quarterbacks. The next quarterback gets a higher contract, even though he's not as good as the actual previously highest paid guy or whatever.
Yep.
So I don't know. I do think that Jerry Jones has a great capacity for drama, almost to the point because he loves drama. But at the end of the day, all right, you're entering the season and you've got CeeDee Lamb and you're paying the market rate, I suppose. I wish I could crush Jerry Jones somehow for this, but I think that this, what seems like forever to us, it was just a matter of a few months, you know?
Dak and Micah are the two ones still sitting out there, and there's less than 2 weeks till this. I don't think Micah Parsons is getting a deal. I don't know what happens with Dak Prescott.
I feel like Micah, Micah just strikes me as the kind of guy that people are scared to give the mega contract.
He's a Mulligetta guy too, by the way.
He's just out there, yeah, man. Yeah. I don't know. He produces and produces and produces. He's just so out there. I don't know. I wonder about the internal dynamics. Of those three, Micah's the one that I've seen the least about, or the Cowboys fans. They don't seem as disgruntled about the Micah Parsons situation
as
they did about the CeeDee Lamb situation.
Our baseball talk this segment is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. All right, CJ Stroud. Spit it out, Sean. CJ Stroud. Getting that MVP love. I know. That part I got right. It's just pronouncing things. CJ Stroud getting some MVP love. What would an MVP season from CJ Stroud look like? What things would need to happen? How set up is he to possibly be the MVP of the National Football League this year? We will discuss that and a whole lot more coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal, the raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.